DS-106, take me away. DS-106. Don't stress. Make art.
The DS-106 Good Spell, Episode 18. Welcome to the DS-106 Good Spell, mantras and koans that delve into the open online course Digital Storytelling 106 from the angle of Mariana Funes' string of 106 pearls of wisdom. I'm John Johnson, and at the other end of Skype is Mariana Funes. Hi, Mariana.
Hi, good evening, John. How are you?
I think I'm well, yeah. It's been quite a nice weekend here. The weather's held up, letting us out into the fresh air, so everything's good, I think. How about yourself?
Have you been doing one of your lovely hikes up your beautiful Scotland?
Just small ones this weekend, a couple of wee walks, but it's been really nice weather. Even though the forecast was doom and gloom, it ended up brightening up quite well both yesterday and today. So hopefully this show will brighten people up. And it kind of follows on, I guess, from last week when we were looking at the Buddhist view of DS-106. And we're sliding into DS-106's art physiotherapy, if you want to use it that way.
That's right.
This is your ground.
Well, because I think, you know, we started to talk about the some of the kind of spiritual elements, I suppose, last week, and that then, you know, leads on to thinking about, you know, how you are in relation to what you put out there, which of course then takes us into our psychology, and the bullet then for this week is this idea of, you know, using DS-106 as psychotherapy, should you choose to use it that way. And I say that, I think, because not everybody uses DS-106 and what we learn in the same way. You know, as we've talked about before, some people think, you know, come to DS-106 because they want to get better at making art. Other people come to it because they want to, you know, learn more about the kind of open web and how to use it. Others are more into it for the tools that they learn. So the idea of psychotherapy, I suppose it's because of my own bias as a psychologist, I kind of also see the value of it in to alter our mood, to help us feel better, to help us learn something about ourselves. And of course, there is precedent for that, and that's what the idea of art psychotherapy is about, you know, because, you know, there is such a thing as art therapy, and there are people that use art for different psychotherapeutic purposes. So, you know, to bring that to our kind of, to our everyday in the context of DS-106, you know, it's that thing that we so often talk about, like the bumper that you played, you know, just now. We often talk about how we might be feeling miserable, we might be having a bad day, and we go, well, let me just look and see what, you know, the daily create is today and make something. And it helps us feel better. And that's my joke always, and hence, you know, why do we need a shrink? We can just do a daily create and feel better.
So there's a couple of things that come to mind there, Mariana. One is the idea, and it comes from the bumper of DS-106 taking you away. And is there any tension between that? And I'm obviously loving the tension word at the moment. And last week's sort of idea, or from a Buddhist perspective, as a Buddhist, taken away is maybe.
Well, we could talk for a long time about this whole concept and that whole state of mind of, you know, of being taken away. And I guess on the one hand, you can look at it as a kind of distraction type thing, i.e. something that just distracts you from how you are. But then, you know, there is the other thread, which is that, you know, sometimes being taken away is not being taken away other than you know, the present moment, but actually is to be focused in the present moment on what you're making and what you're creating. And as I say, we could talk about, you know, about it from, and maybe we can do a little bit of that today. But I think it is this notion of the, my Abbot tells me that the way I tell the difference is by monitoring the quality of mind that I have whilst I am involved in any kind of digital activity. And if my quality of mind is such that, you know, there are like 1,000 thoughts going around and I'm kind of, you know, tense, thinking I don't have time, I've got to finish it and so on, then, you know, that is not the aspiration. But that actually there are ways in which one can use the computer in mindful ways, i.e., be, you know, to help you be aware of the present moment and be engaged. So it's not, then it isn't being taken away to be distracted, but it's being absorbed in what you're doing moment to moment. And I think making digital art can be like that.
Yeah, so that, I mean, sort of mixes in nicely with the next bit I was going to say, is that this idea of, you know, enjoying yourself and while you're learning, the idea that we are sort of learning animals and we actually do enjoy learning, that probably goes against a lot of people's experience of formal education, because there's so many bumps in that process and you might not be pacing it right and all the rest of it. But does it also fit into the idea that is discussed sometimes in education about flow, when you're doing something well, that it's moving nicely? As I say, I think that's very hard to achieve in a classroom situation very often, because there often is a need, or a perceived need, or the exam-driven need to cover a bunch of material, and at the rate you may be covering, it might be wrong for pupils. Mm.
Well, it would be, you know, I'm heartened to hear that, you know, in your world, maybe, you know, things like flow and the importance of that, you know, is discussed and used. I mean, the whole notion of flow, I mean, I think, yes, it's absolutely relevant. And you know, most of the time we find out about what is it that helps us create the kind of mental state that will help us, you know, learn, be engaged in what we're doing, or, you know, however we want to frame it. We learn that by trial and error. Children don't get taught. I mean, that nowadays, maybe some do, I should say, because there are some, you know, schools that, you know, do teach meditation and various other things, you know, to kids. But you know, it's not a majority by any means, and we don't get taught how to run our mind. So yes, I mean, I think it's entirely relevant, and we've talked about it in the context of the S106, and more generally in the context of making art. You know, that it does, because effectively, what flow is this notion of your ability to cope with the external environment somehow being matched in a particular way, so that it is challenging enough to help you do stuff, but not so challenging that you are crippled by the challenge, because you go, oh shit, there's no way I can. Oh, are we allowed to swear on the S106 radio?
I think your Abbot would bless that.
Damn, that's it now. But you know, that you've got that sort of edge, don't you, where you want something to be challenging and yet not so hard or not so difficult, but then it paralyzes you, it stops you from being able to tackle it. And that's really what the idea of flow is about, is finding that kind of, that fine-tuning, really.
So, interestingly, the people in education I've heard that sort of thing from before have been people who've been looking at games-based learning and taking it from the sort of way that games designers work and make a game sticky, you know, allows you to get better, but not so easy that it's just too easy. But you know, you never really completely fail. You just get enough to keep going and keep being absorbed, which I guess is why games are maybe so popular among young people. And there's an idea that education in education we can learn something from this. So that kind of fits in. And it's quite interesting that two different spheres set a spiritual. I've lost my tongue now. a spiritual side and somebody coming from a very commercial side, because games are ultimately very commercial.
You want to create, but with the game, in order for it to be commercially successful, you want people to, I like the idea of sticky, it's nice, you want people to stay in that place where they remain interested, but it's not so hard that they just go, no, I'm not going to do this. But also what you've just said, which is that it's not so easy that then it becomes it becomes boring, which of course connects back to what you were saying about the classroom and how sometimes education in the classroom, if you use flow to analyze it, often what happens is that a lot of students will be more capable than the environment, so then people get bored, don't they?
Or it's not
challenging enough.
Or it's too challenging. That's, I think, one of the problems with trying to move a group of people forward at the same time.
When you haven't taught them how to be, how to train their own mind and how to manage their own mind in such a way that they can request what they need. And of course, depending on how young the students are, people don't know, and you need to create, you need to teach them.
A hard call. I don't know if this is a good time to break out. It's a recording that you suggested we listen to of Gardner Campbell talking about using our cyber infrastructure to learn to be open to ourselves. I think
he's a lovely example of somebody who's coming from yet again, a different environment. So it's not a kind of game designer, not a psychologist, somebody who is, sort of from a technical background, but actually, somebody that has a great deal of insight around how you can use, the internet, you can use what we are doing on DS106 and beyond, in order to, to learn more about ourselves, and I think he explains it in a really lovely way.
Okay, well, here goes.
When we talk about openness, we usually think about open to the world. Everybody can see it. That's where you're going to be exposed to the most massive network effects. So I like this, obviously. I think a lot of us here do, although there have been some really good interrogations of the idea. But there are other levels of openness as well. Or to put it another way, places that are closed where we can't see that things are closed. What about being open to each other in a learning community? What about the teacher open to the learner and the learners open to each other? To what extent does a Blackboard discussion forum make the participants actually open to each other? To what extent are learners ready to talk about their vulnerabilities to the teacher? And maybe they're not willing to do that because the teacher is not willing to talk about his or her vulnerabilities to the learner. Vulnerabilities are fine. That's actually where the learning happens. To know as we are known requires identity markers. This is a non-trivial factor. Any adult who says this is a trivial factor has forgotten what it was like to decorate a locker. Or is denying the fact that they actually agonized over the choice of the welcome mat for their front door. These are non-trivial factors. And then finally, open to ourselves. To what extent do the learning experiences we co-create or impose open us up to self-awareness or metacognition? The thing about the personal cyber infrastructure is that once the students have begun to build it, it can then be the object of narration, curation, and sharing itself at a meta level. Let's get together and talk about the cyber infrastructure you built. Why did you build it that way? What does that represent about you as a learner or as an architect? What about the one I built? What if we modularize it and we start swapping among ourselves, like levels of a game, where we can rank the efficacy of various modules we've built on our own and together? Then you learn something about yourself. That would be okay.
So there's quite a lot of things that just in that 2.5 or 2 minutes 11 seconds clip, Mariana, that are interesting. He talked about metacognition, and I know there's a lot of people teaching now who are talking to their quite young pupils about that sort of thing and been informed by that. And also the idea of decorating one's locker, of having an identity, which is, you know, to somebody who is a blogger, for instance, is a obvious hook up on that.
I think it's a lovely way to, you know, to describe something that, you know, often, you know, I hear it described from a very theoretical point of view. But actually, you know, it's grounded in our everyday experience, because I think Gardner Campbell kind of understands that, you know, everything that we do, we are kind of making choices, and the choices say something about ourselves, about who we are. And the point that he makes about, you know, it's all very well to talk about openness, but actually part of that is about, you know, learning to be open to ourselves. And that part of that, in turn, is about, you know, critically reflecting on our habits, you know, actually being willing to be vulnerable. And in his case, you know, and he's talking about actually, you know, are we willing to engage in this kind of vulnerable space with our students, whether you're doing that face-to-face or whether you're doing it in the context of, you know, being open to yourself and your patterns and your quirks when you're publishing a blog. And I think that that's where it starts to be, where you start to navigate that thing that says, you know, metacognition develops, but it only develops if you develop, you know, you have to be willing to go to that edge that says, let me look at my blind spots, and be willing to talk about that, and be willing to sit with that, and be, and in the context of being, you know, working in the open web, it's also being willing to sit with it in public, as it were. And that's a tough call. It's a very tough thing to ask. My experience has been that most of, you know, the faculty that in my higher education context, when I talk about it, they're just terrified, and they wouldn't even consider doing the sort of things that Gardner was just talking about.
Yeah, and maybe, I mean, I think it's quite a scary prospect, and maybe one of the nice things about, say, DS-106 is it's reasonably jokey and relaxed. And I think you can just manage to open up a wee bit in certain ways. You don't need to lay the whole, you know, your whole soul bare in every blog post, I think. So you can take it in stages. Some of us might not be ready for, you know, the full Buna, but we can do wee bits and pieces and enjoy that and open up slowly.
Well, I think that it's a very, you know, it's something that I'm getting really more and more interested in, because it is this idea of, I guess, the dissociation, the kind of one step removed. You're making something, and the attention is in the something you're making, or the something that you're choosing, or the something that, you know, you are learning about. So, you know, you go off and you create an animated GIF, and it's there. So there is a kind of one step removed from, let me tell you about myself and who I am. And it connects for me with something, because, you know, I've been playing DS-106 at the York College with Ryan Seslow and Michael Branson Smith, and they did a hangout this week, I think, and talked about how, you know, I think we might have talked about this project that Ryan is doing. It's called GIF the Portrait. Where he gets his students to create an animated GIF of a portrait they choose. And the key thing in that is that you choose a portrait of, the way he briefs it is, you choose a portrait of somebody that you admire. And the hangout talked about how often students, if you say to them, you know, well, actually, you know, what do you find inspirational? What do you find that you love in your art? You know, all of these things. Often a student will go completely quiet and won't have a clue what to say. But actually, he discovered through this project where you say, pick a portrait that of somebody you admire, and will make something with it. And then you ask them, so what is it about this person that you find inspiring? And they cannot stop talking.
Yeah.
And of course, the point that Ryan is making is, in making the choice of the portrait, in talking about it, in talking about what is it that they admire of this person versus the other people they could have chosen. And to be fair, he didn't just say, because they don't just pick people. Sometimes you find they might be, he said, you know, it might be SpongeBob for all I care. You know, it doesn't really matter, he was saying. You know, the point is that they get to talk about the themselves and discover something about what their voice might be as artists. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about, really, which is that we do in DS-106, which is it does give us an experience, an opportunity to more safely unpack, you know, what are our likes and dislikes, you know, what are the kind of, you know, what are the things that we find difficult, what are the things that we find actually straightforward that we might have thought we would find difficult. But you don't have to talk about that. You just make art, damn it.
Yeah, and let the other stuff leak around the sides, I guess.
Or if you choose the way that Gardner Campbell was suggesting, you know, and I have been doing a lot more of that, you can, because everything is there. This is the thing where I was talking about using, you know, kind of almost like, you know, the contemplative internet. Everything is there. And we talk so much about keeping our archives and keeping everything stored up and accessible and all that. You know, you can use it just to access content, but you can also use it to do, you know, some critical reflection around what is it saying about me? And other people can, of course, as well, if they want to, because your stuff is there for them to do that, and that might be a bit more more scary.
Yeah, I guess everybody's been fairly gentle, and there's that gentleness built into a good course or a good online community. I was thinking, I think yesterday's Daily Create was to write about the first time that you went online.
Oh yes.
And the first time I did, one of the first things I joined was a mailing list for HyperCard, which was an Apple application of just immense value. It doesn't work anymore. It's been abandoned, but it was a very creative application. And it was my first experience of a mailing list, and it was full of these marvellous people who were just incredibly generous, and just... you hear so many accounts of people who have a terrible time in online communities, and you have flame wars and, you know, some of the horrible things that we see going on. And this place was just, it was just lovely. I don't think I ever saw an angry word. And there was hundreds of people in that community. That sort of set the tone for my online life since the mid-90s.
And I have to say that whilst I would, you know, I've worked with computers for many, many years, and my background is in that and so on, you know, it wasn't the internet, and it wasn't being, you know, out in the open. And I would say the same thing in relation to VS106, because I would say that VS106 was my first experience of this kind of open online learning. And I hadn't really participated in very many things openly like that before. And like you, you know, I my experience would be I couldn't want anything, you know, anything more. And I've often been, you know, actually, you know, touched to, you know, even kind of, you know, I've cried sometimes, you know, seeing the kindness of people or how people, like when we were doing stuff like our radio shows, you know, the things that people would do just to pull something together for the love of it. You know, there is something really wonderful about that. But I do think there is something about art and the creation of something, be it a radio show, be it a you know, be it an animated GIF, be it a film, be it whatever, that does kind of bring a particular sense to, well, we just put ourselves to one side and we try to make the best we can of the thing that we are making. Like you and I are making this thing, you know. We do the best we can to make it a good show, and then that is the primary goal. And other things maybe sort of can fall out of it, but it's not. But we are not constantly talking about, you know, the team building element, the self-awareness element, the metacognition element, how we might be learning about performance as we do this. We don't talk about that, do we? It happens, but we don't talk about it.
Just when you're talking there, I was just wondering if this, if you could get, now obviously there is a problem on the internet with flame wars and things like that and people being very unpleasant, and, you know, we've had all the Gamergate stuff in the gaming community, and I just wondered if there was some way to measure, you know, the amount of bad stuff that goes on in the community and the types of community or the interests. And I wonder if communities that are, say, creative, because I'm thinking of DS106 or the HyperCard community, which was about making software, really, and not art.
Or the phoner people with their photography,
And I wonder if you're, if that lessens the amount of bad stuff that goes on, if you're all involved in making something and making that public, as opposed to just discussing something. So if you looked at philosophy news groups, for instance, would there be more flame wars in a philosophy news group than there would be in a creative writing news group, say? I don't know if that's measurable, but it just struck me as it might be.
I'm sure it would be, you know, and it would make a lovely research project for somebody. Actually doing some kind of an analysis of that and looking at the types of, you know, the sort of type of learning experience, what you're learning, and whether that somehow impacts how people interact. One of the things that connects to me, you know, is thinking about this whole art critique thing and how that is done. And one of the things I am learning about it is that it does offer a way of engaging with people, of talking together through the art, that allows a different kind of conversation, a conversation that is not quite that kind of oppositional thing that I think often creates the problems online, which is, you know, my way, it's black, it's white, it, you know, it's yellow, it's green, that sort of oppositional thing. But actually the discipline, as I am, you know, the little bit I've learned of critiquing art teaches you something else. It teaches you to look beyond the like it, don't like it, to actually, what do I see? Can I be more descriptive? Can I talk about patterns? And there is a way in which I wonder whether that art making, art describing, you know, practice, whether that gives us as a community of people a different way to talk together, that encourages more, you know, the ability to hold multiple perspectives. I mean, let's take Sandy for an example, you know, and Sandy, how she hates animated GIFs. Yeah. You know, we have many examples like that of people that, you know, we have very different, what's the word I'm looking for? So, you know, liking animated GIFs versus not, the type of films we like, the type of, you know, what we like to make in terms of our digital stories, what we would count as a digital story versus, you know, what we wouldn't. You know, if you were going to focus on an oppositional type of conversation, there is plenty there, isn't there, John?
Yeah, oh, definitely. I actually think, I mean, I've only tried this once now, your sort of steps through looking at something, and I think it really is something that could very easily be built in to DS106 for students as a sort of requirement for, you know, once every couple of weeks or once a week, take something and do that sort of analysis on it, because I really find it very useful, and I'm not committing to one a week. I thought I might do one a month, and just start using that to think about something, because it really did change, slow me down a lot, which is really good, I think, because I think the internet and things like Tumblr can sort of get you into next, what's next, ooh, that's nice, next, like it, next, you know, sort of mentality, which is not, well, it's not really what I want to do. So I really found that a very useful exercise, Marianne. I'm glad you sort of brought it up and I've pushed it, and I think there's a couple other people starting as well, so it'll be quite interesting to see that happen, you know.
I think it does take things beyond the idea of the generic commenting, because it does focus it on the art. It focuses actually on people have been doing, you know, art critiques in art schools for a zillion years, you know. There is a lot there to learn. And actually, you know, there is that question, you know, could we be using some of that to help us have a different dialogue more widely? And I am kind of slowly getting more interested in that. I think there is something there. It does require, as you say, it does require you to be willing to engage with things and to slow right down and take the time. I am finding it really helpful. I'm also finding it really hard. Mm. Really hard to find the time. Really hard to kind of, you know, go, oh, you know, well, if I'm going to do it, you need to give it attention. And if you can't just rush it. You know, so it's kind of, it does require a different quality of attention from you, which the whole process seems to encourage, really, beyond, like you say, beyond that sort of like it, don't like it.
I think it's interesting because you could potentially look at anything, you know. You usually just put comments on things you like. Mm-hmm. And this doesn't, you know, you can use this to comment on anything, and it doesn't become a negative or confrontational or anything else. It just becomes what you're, and it's part, I think, what you're trying to do is just think a bit harder.
Exactly, and I think it can be, I hope that I'll get to learn enough as we go, and depending if we do a few more together, we can talk maybe a bit more, here about.
Sure, yeah. You there, Marianne?
Check some way. But by the time you get to that, because you've attended to it and the way that you've talked about it, hopefully it would be something that people could, you know, take on board or not take on board, depending, but definitely wouldn't be offended.
Yeah, oh, definitely. No, I don't think you could be. I'm beginning to get a wee dropout from you there, so.
Oh, okay.
Right. It's kind of getting, we've passed our half hour.
We have passed our half hour. Goodness.
I've got to play one last clip since I made it.
yes, we must.
Just to let sort of the background of this is, after last week's show, I was reminded that the reason that this show is the Good Spell, which is conflated in my mind with gospel, and it was taken from a book by Gary Snyder called Earth Household. Gary Snyder's an American beat stroke Buddhist poet who's been around for an incredible number of years. I believe he's 84 and still alive, but he had this idea of a good spell. And I think he actually also conflated that with the idea of a mantra being a good spell. And that kind of tickled me for a title for the show. And I think I sent you a link or two, and you suggested that I read this poem. So I'm going to just play it, because it's probably easier to record it and play it. And it's quite a surprising poem, I think, from a poet who is so involved in the natural world. It's called Why I Take Good Care of My Macintosh, and we'll just, I think, play this and then play out. Why I take good care of my Macintosh. Because it buzzes while printing like a planer in a workshop. Because it jumps like a skittish horse and sometimes throws me. Because it's pokey
when cold, because plastic is sad, strong material that is charming to rodents, because it's flighty, because my mind flies into it through my fingers, because it leaps forward and backwards, is an endless sniffer and searcher, is my faithful hound, because its keys click like hail on a rock, and it winks when it goes out, and puts word heaps and hoards for me, dozens of pockets of gold under boulders in stream beds, identical seed pods, strong in a vine, or it stores bins of bolts, and I lose them and find them, because whole worlds of writing can boldly layered out, and highlighted, and vanish in a flash at delete, so it teaches of impermanence and pain, because my wife likes it, and because my computer and me are both brief in this world, both foolish, and we have earthly fates, because I have let it move in with me, right inside the tent, and it goes with me out every morning, we fill up our baskets, get back home, feel rich, relax, I throw it a scrap, and it hums.
So, there we go, that was Why I Take Good Care of My Macintosh by Gary Snyder. And I think Mariana will just play out on another bumper and call it a night, will we?
Yep, I think right. I shall have to go and listen to the archive of this so that I can hear you reading this wonderful poem.
Yeah, at last you will
actually
listen.
We usually think about open to the world.
Brilliant.
Good spell. We're John and Mariana, good spell. It's half an honor and it's everything you wanted to know. Tune into the DS106 radio show. Intellectual conversation, the leaders of the game. They are bright, they are sweet, so go and give them a tweet. The DS106 good spell show.